With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
Hi everyone, JD here. Now, what's the best thing to come out of Belgium? Christian Benteke, obviously. Michy Batshuayi? We might need to reevaluate that. Anyway, the answer I was looking for is Belgian beer. And our friends at Beer 52 are offering FYP listeners a chance to have a free case of 8 Belgian beers, just having to cover the £5.95 for postage. We can't go anywhere in the world right now, so why not bring Belgium to you with this great offer? All you have to do is go to www.beer52.com/FYP, cover the £5.95 for postage, and Beer 52 will deliver 8 free beers straight to your door. And then, unlike at Cellarst, you'll be able to drink beer inside of the pitch during the next game. Sort of. Beer 52 is a monthly beer club where they collect the best beer from around the world and deliver it to your door with monthly themes. This month is Belgium, where you can discover incredible beers like Steenberg's 6.5% Blonde, Brewerge Lekker's Belgian IPA, and Arvan's Double. I assume that those are beers and not Belgian players that Palace have been linked with recently. And like the option to watch Palace with crowd noise or Ray Lewington noise, the choice is yours. If you don't like the dark beer, choose the light option. It's that easy. Each case also comes with the award-winning beer magazine Ferment, as well as a tasty snack to enjoy with your beer. And like Steve Coppell when he went to Man City in 1996, you can change your mind and cancel at any time. There's no minimum commitment, and you can just take the free case, try the beers, and see what you think. Just go to www.beer52.com/FYP to claim your free case of 8 craft beers now. That's the word beer and 52.com/FYP. Right, on with the podcast. Hello and welcome to the 5-Year Plan Podcast.
Hey!
Pod 375. And on this week's pod, we're reviewing that 1-0 win over West Brom, which basically, touch wood, basically keeps Palace up, hopefully. And to do that on the pod, I've got Kevin Day. Hello to you.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
Good.
No one ever asks how you are.
Well, you're the only person that ever asks that. You're the only one that really cares, I think.
No, I ask.
I knew you were going to do that. Jack Pearce, hello to you. How are you doing?
Hello, thank you. Yes, very pleased with the result on Saturday, but have to say the period of between 3 and 5 when I was clearing out my mother-in-law's garage was actually more fun than watching Palace on Saturday. But I'm here. Let's talk about it.
Good, yeah. I mean, rather that than an analysis of clearing out your mother-in-law's garage. Sounds really filthy. And our guest this week, debuting on the podcast, is one of our patrons. He's an absolute legend and regular of the patron quiz, and a very nice guy indeed. It's Mr. Matt Buckland. Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, guys. It's a pleasure to be here.
How are you doing?
I am not too bad, thank you, not too bad. I had the COVID jab yesterday, so I'm feeling a little under the weather, but generally speaking, I'm okay. Things are looking up.
Right, well, I mean, after watching that Palace West Brom game, we're all a bit under the weather, Matt, so we know we know how you feel. It's lovely to see you. And for the benefit of the listeners, he's wearing FYP merchandise and drinking out of an FYP mug as well. All available if you join our Patreon. That's absolutely seamless from me. At patreon.com/FYP podcast, like Matt, and this is the reward. He's in the top tier, and one of the rewards is joining a live podcast. You also get post-match pod merchandise that Matt's wearing, and access to the patron-only WhatsApp club, which Matt will attest to. Gets very busy on match days, doesn't it?
Yes. I also love the fact that you're describing all of this merch when our users won't actually see what I'm wearing or what I'm drinking out of. But yes, especially the WhatsApp club in itself is worth it. The sheer amount of differing opinions on there is staggering. But it's fantastic. It gives you proper insight into every different fans' mentalities when it comes to the games itself, and also there's always a laugh in there when we kind of stick the knife into you, JD. So it's a good balance.
Yeah, like podcasts, like WhatsApp group. I just literally can't get away from it. And before we move on to reviewing that West Brom game, a quick shout out to our Race Europe page. So Kevin, we're still, I say we as in not you, but me, Andy, Rob and Rich and Mike are still running and cycling to raise money for Palace for Life Foundation for Race Europe. Do you want to hazard a guess as to virtually where we've got to in Europe now?
Crawley.
we're just outside Crawley. We've reached Bilbao.
Oh, that's nice.
So I think we've done Copenhagen and Germany, and we're now down to Spain. So not far to go.
What route are you going?
The scenic route.
Oh, okay.
I think. But anyway, we would love donations from you at justgiving.com/fundraising/FYP-race-Europe.
JD, after last week's stop off in Amsterdam, I presumed you would still be in Amsterdam. So congratulations on moving out.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm doing the least amount of anyone. Turns out cycling, you can get a lot further than my little 5Ks. But do you know what? It all counts. And any money raised will go towards supporting the Palace for Life Foundation. It'll be very much appreciated. Let's move on then, Kevin, to reviewing that 1-0 win over West Brom. It felt a little bit, I'm sure we'll come on to the entertainment that was / wasn't on show, it felt a little bit like a Roy Hodgson of old performance. Quite resolute, a Luca penalty that we haven't seen for quite a long time, and a win that pretty much keeps us safe. What were your thoughts on the game?
Well, I think quite resolute is just about the nicest thing you could possibly say about it, isn't it? I mean, quite resolute, great. Dismal, dull, shocking, but it's three. But I think it says a lot that we got two yellow cards in the last 90 seconds for time wasting against a team that scored fewer goals than everyone else but two clubs in the Premier League. I think it says a lot that the only two candidates for man of the match were two centre-backs. Yeah. We've said it how many times this season, take the 3 points, forget the performance, move on. There was one, the cat now thinks I'm some kind of god, because at least halfway through the second half I was able to predict to her that it was going to start raining over our house in about 2 minutes. And it did, because I know how long it takes weather to get from Sellers Park to my house. So the cat just thinks I'm a joke, but that literally was the only entertaining part of the game. There was one brilliant move. Just before we scored, there's like an 8-man, 10-pass move that obviously the instructions got on the pitch to stop doing that sort of fancy down stuff. Also proves that Roy Hodgson's not psychic, because I spent the entire game saying, swap Ayu for Ezzy, just swap Ayu in his position. Something might happen, and he didn't. So clearly he has no psychic powers. But we've said it just about every time we win on this pod, the points are more important than the performance. We're safe now. Let's hope that something happens exciting in the next few games.
Surely if you've got the psychic abilities there, Kevin, then if you'd have just thought about IU and SA switching, they would have somehow connected and done it themselves.
No, I've got them. But clearly, neither Roy Hodgson nor those two have.
What a shame.
To be fair, they were probably quite busy at the time. Not that busy, to be fair. IU certainly wasn't that busy for the 90 minutes. But it just occurred to me about 5 minutes down, I thought that would solve so many problems. You'd still be defensively solid. But SA so desperately wants to come in the middle and be a number 10. If you're playing somebody behind Benteke, make it Eze and let Ayew do his hard work out on the flank where he can be defensive and everyone sees it. It's just, but beyond that, I mean, it was what we expected, wasn't it? But we're safe. Happy days.
Well, this is the thing, Matt, as well. Like, and, you know, we debate on this podcast a lot about the style of play. And you know, there are parallels to the Fulham game a few weeks ago, which was obviously pretty turgid viewing and a draw. Although in hindsight, when you look at Fulham's form, maybe not such a bad result. But does it really matter when Palace... And actually, I said it felt like an old Roy Hodgson performance. Actually, felt like an old Allardyce performance from when he was here. Because we got the 3 points. So does it really matter that the football is particularly bad when you've got those 3 points and essentially now are safe?
Yes and no. Ultimately, another 3 points on the table is what we're there for. You know, that's what Roy's there for. Roy is there to come in, get us the 3 points, and then... and whatever happens from that, like that's the goal of the game. The goal of the game is to win. Obviously, sounds stupid to say, but that's ultimately the. So it doesn't necessarily matter how we do that. But that being said, we're playing a team such as West Brom, who historically have not been very good throughout this year. Yes, they've tightened up under Allardyce, and yes, they're a little more structured now, and they've kind of starting to kind of do what he wants them to do. But at the same time. If you compare where we are in the table and us as two separate sides, you would think going into that we would be more aggressive. We would be coming at them. We would be testing them. We would be trying to figure out. We would be trying to break them down. That if you look at that on paper, I suppose. Now all of us know that from what we've seen over the past couple of weeks, in particular, there's been a shift change in kind of what we wanted to do. I think Cahill mentioned it a couple of post-match pods ago. I think possibly against the Man United game, correct me if I'm wrong with that one. But he said that they've gone back to basics with this sort of side. And this is exactly what it feels like at the moment. It feels like Roy has flipped it on his head and go, right, we need to get back to basics. We need to stop conceding as many goals as we possibly can.
Yeah.
We need to tighten it up and then maybe hit them on the break and take advantage of the opportunities that we have. The only problem with that is... when we don't have Wilf on the pitch, we don't have that outlet and we don't have that pace to kind of take 30, 40 yards up the pitch. There's a couple of occasions on the game of the weekend where you saw Ayew and you saw Wilf do that. One kind of thing springs into mind where Wilf collected the ball, had three players around him, has a really, really fancy footwork and managed to get out of it. And then he let PVA go down the wing. That's what we've been missing. So now that we've got Wilf back, we may see a slight change, kind of more into the more exciting sort of thing, because we have that sort of player in our side. I think for the past 4 weeks in particular, it's been back to basics. There is the whole kind of the Wilf thing is hanging over us, no matter what we do, because quite frankly, he's our best player. And until we get some players in to kind of complement what Wilf does, but they're mainly in central midfield because we're in dire need of somebody creative in there. We've said it so many times and it's broken record. And even Gary Neville said it a while ago, we need a Kabai style player.
Yeah.
We need somebody like that in our side. Someone with a bit of steel about them, someone who is going to be able to have a little bit of a nasty streak by them, but then ping those balls and be that playmaker who's going to do that. Whilst we don't have that at the moment, I think this is what we're going to be until the end of the season. We're going to be this style of player. We're going to be the Hodgson or Allardyce style thing until the end, until we are mathematically safe, because we know what Roy's like. Like we've had Roy for three seasons now. And we know what to expect. And if it follows type, as soon as we're mathematically safe, all bets are off. Then all of a sudden we start playing more expansive football, and then it doesn't really matter to kind of what happens during their games. It'll be a little bit more entertainment for the fans. And I think that's what we're missing at the moment.
Yeah, that's a really good point there, Jack, actually, about the defence, because we have moaned on this pod a lot about the fact that we're supposed to be a resolute defensive side and we've let in a lot of goals. And actually that is now three clean sheets in the last four games, I believe. And as Kevin alluded to, that centre-back partnership with Cahill and Kouyaté, finally it feels like we're getting a bit of consistency there. I know it's game week 29 or 28, so it's taken us a while to get there, but that is definitely a positive to take, even if it does mean that we are going back to basics. I think I might name this week's pod Going Back to Basics. But, I mean, that is a positive to take, isn't it? Surely.
Yeah, we were, you know, pretty well set throughout the whole game. There weren't really any moments where they cut through us. I thought the keeper played really well. I thought he was very proactive in how he managed his box. I don't think there were many opportunities where there was much hesitancy other than one where Coyote seems to, you know, dally on the ball a little bit and then does really well to kind of cover up his own mistake. But yeah, I mean, it always helps to have a set back four. And, you know, we've talked previously about PVA not being especially the best defender, but he's done okay in the last few games. I don't think there's been any moment where he's been particularly out of place or at fault for any particular opportunity for the opponent. So that's good, because I think a lot of people obviously would prefer to see Tyreek Mitchell. We can't at the moment due to injury, so PVA is doing his bit. But yeah, having a, you know, a set middle three, two centre-backs and a goalkeeper that know each other, as well as those three are appearing to know each other at the moment, is a real positive. I thought Cahill, again, was probably our best player on the pitch, to be honest. I thought he was exceptional, really led well, did everything he needs to. But, you know, he's seen it all before. He's, you know, he's got the experience behind him. And, yeah, for a man who is of his age, he you know, he might not be as fast as he used to be, but he does still read the game really well. And I thought we were defensively very sound. I thought Luca played very well just in front of them. You know, again, he's running in a decent run of form. You know, at fault for Spurs' first goal the week before last, but other than that, he's had a good month or so of football, and obviously the goal capped off that performance. So yeah, I thought we were in a good shape. But yeah, I mean, as the two guys have mentioned, it wasn't the most inspiring performance going forward. But I think a lot of the fans' feeling about that is based on, again, you know, sorry for listeners who are hearing this for the thousandth time, but, you know, us not being there does make a huge difference in terms of how we reflect on a game. And, you know, that was no worse than us, you know, beating Watford a few years ago without having a shot on target where Troy Deeney scored an own goal. But it felt different because we weren't there able to celebrate and enjoy it as we would do. And it does feel different when you can just turn the TV off after the game. But that all said, it is three valuable points. 37 points has been enough to stay up in six of our seven full seasons in the Premier League. I fully expect it to be the same this time, but with, you know, nine games to go, we should add to that total and be more than comfortable come the end of the campaign.
Can I just point out, JD, that to some of us, Gary Cahill is a kid. He's a fine young man. And also, yeah, three clean sheets is great, but two of those clean sheets were against the team's 18th and 19th in the Premier League. True. They're the least you'd expect against opposition like that. Yeah. At home, and I know at home is different in these days, yada yada. And also, in terms of going forward, our only real opportunity in the second half came when Gaeta launched it long, Benteke headed it to himself to have a shot. So the word positive, yeah, both the clean sheet and going forward is kind of loosely used, because the only positive was the 3 points, basically. Yeah. And again, that's, as Matt said, that's Roy Hodgson's job, is to get us 3 points. This would be the worst of all seasons. The financial hit that football's taken, this would be the worst of all seasons to go down. We're not going to go down. I don't think we'll change our football regardless of how many points we've got in the next couple of games. And we just have to accept that's what it is. I'm not entirely sure we would have all been celebrating it yet if we were all in Sellers Park. I'd have slinked away slightly uncomfortably, I think, to be perfectly honest. But it indicates as well the negative view of us. We're in that little gaggle of teams, like Leeds, Wolves, Arsenal, Palace, have been sort of lumped together for quite a few weeks. But nobody said after Leeds got a point against Chelsea, nobody said, oh, that's the point Leeds needed to see them safe. Nobody said Arsenal need a win against Spurs to see them safe. The whole narrative from everybody, BBC, Sky, TalkSport, is, oh, Palace might be safe now, because they think that's what we are. Out of those four teams, even though we've been above Wolves and Leeds for quite some time in the table, and now it's all about Palace staying up. And that's something we need to change as much as anything else. But that's all it is. That's how I'm sorry. Have we got enough points to stay up? Yes, we have. Now, is it going to change? No, it's not.
That's a fair point. That's a very fair point. I think that narrative will remain probably for. I don't even know how that changes, because, to be honest, that's an outside perspective. Like, it's very well inside us going, we're ready for top 10 or whatever. But that, to me, feels like something that's how other clubs see us. And until Palace are starting to make 30, 40 million pound signings on the regular, like Leicester, for example, or until we're bankrolled by an oligarch, I don't know how that changes, but it's a really, really fair point. And I hadn't really thought about it from that perspective. But really, you're all right. The staying up is still the main objective. And I do think on Saturday, had I come away from that game, I certainly wouldn't have come away feeling like massively entertained, but I'd probably come away feeling a sense of relief at the fact that we had hit 37 yeah. points. There'd be a lot of really take that Allardyce, obviously, in there to add to the pantomime, which I think we'd all have enjoyed. But I think we'd have gone back to the Pawsons and had a few pints, moaned about it, and then probably moved on. But as Jack says, it's a different experience at the moment watching football. It's a very different viewing experience. And hopefully, with the news that the season tickets, which we'll come on to in part three, and potentially even some of us getting into the penultimate game of the season, then we might be able to get back to some sort of normality. Matt, let's talk about a little bit about the penalty. I mean, I don't really need to ask any of you, I don't think, whether it was a penalty or not, because it was one of the most clear penalties that's been awarded this season, although technically the referee didn't actually give the penalty. It had to go to a VAR check to be given, and that itself shows the fine margins in football at the moment, because if we hadn't been given that, we would all be moaning at a 0-0 draw against West Brom, because nothing else really happened in the game. But it was a penalty confidently struck away from Luca, first penalty of the season from him. We're used to seeing him in double digits with pens, and so it was nice to see him tuck it away. And I thought, Matt, Luca had quite a good game, and I think quietly he's been going almost back to his old self. What were your thoughts on his penalty and sort of Luca in general?
Well, first of all, it was a stonewall penalty. There's no two ways about it. Furlong leant into it with his arm, and it hit his arm very clearly. Like, there was possibly a kind of shout for maybe it hit the line of the sleeve, but his actions did it, and that is a stonewall. I was just a very, very quick point on VAR. I was glad to see VAR working in the way that it did. Obviously, the offside gave me a little bit of a kind of a concern because, oh God, it'll be, again, typical Palace. It will be very, very typical if we get an opportunity like that and we get a water light and ultimately have looking towards the penalty and Wilf is a millimetre offside as well. But I was very happy with the way VAR actually, the referee, wasn't sure, went over to the was sent over to the screen and took 2 seconds and saw it on the first go. It didn't take too long. Didn't mess around with this kind of, oh, roll it back, let me see, roll it back, let me see, all that sort of stuff. Didn't do anything like that. Just went, yeah, that's straight a penalty. Fair enough, done. Penalty get awarded. The penalty itself, obviously, it's Luca. Like, how many times has Luca missed a penalty for us? Once? Twice?
No more than twice, I don't think.
I remember one against Man City. Last minute at home.
New Year's Eve.
That might be it, actually.
Yeah. So, I mean, and if you look at his success rate, it's high 90s. You know what you're going to get with a Luca penalty. I thought maybe because Wilf was on the pitch, Wilf might go, I want to do it. Because he's first game back, may want to score, you know, get that extra buzz. Who knows? But Luca steps up, dispatches it. No harm, no foul. Like, that was easy, and that was probably always going to happen on that. But in terms of Luca himself, I find Luca is one of those players who defies opinion. He really, really is. I live in North London, and I live with two other guys. One's an Arsenal fan, and one's an Ipswich fan. So I ignore the Ipswich fan massively, but I talk to the Arsenal fan quite a lot because we found a common ground and a common player in that, and that's Granit Xhaka. Luka and Xhaka are both the... I'm not going to talk about Xhaka too much, obviously. This is not an Arsenal pod, this is a Palace pod. But they're both the kind of player who goes under the radar and does what needs to be done. The only downside to what they do is their passing and their distribution isn't as great as it could be. Like, if you want that. But that's the style of both player that they both are. And they go under the radar and they slowly improve. I was having a chat with my dad about Luca in particular, and I'm of the camp that, like you, JD, I think he's been doing pretty well for the past couple of games. He seems to kind of roll into form a little bit. You know, and obviously the penalty will help his confidence. My dad is of the opinion that he's been absolutely terrible over the past 4 or 5 weeks. Like the Tottenham game is like kind of ingrained in his memory. But I can see both sides. I can see like Luca is not a fancy player. He gets in, does the job, moves on. It's like, I remember when we signed him, we were saying, oh yeah, he's a Jedi replacement. Mm. And he's that kind of a mould of a player. If you look at what Jedi did for us, he was just there doing his job, putting a foot in when he needs to, always pick up a yellow card and then move on. And that's what Luka has become for us. And I think that's what when Allardyce signed him, that's kind of what you want. He needs to add some steel into that. Okay. So I think he's doing a really, really good job. Is he the complete article? And is he somebody who's going to create loads of chances for us? No. But then again, that's not his job. His job is to be in the middle of the park, to break up play and release whoever's in front of him. It kind of rolls back to what we were saying a little earlier, is that the only problem with that is we've got nobody in front of him at the moment to release to. And also he's just...
Or next to him. Or next to him.
Well, Granit Xhaka's lack of passing ability stands out because he's surrounded by 9 players who can pass. Lucas doesn't because he's not surrounded by anybody who can pass. So Luca doesn't... Nobody goes, but that guy can't pass. He just goes, none of it. But the irony of the VAR kerfuffle was that it was overlooked. That was one of the few moments of imagination that we showed in the game. It's one of the few creative things that we did, and no one really analysed that afterwards because it was a different free kick. I think Benteke should claim an assist because the ball was clearly aimed for him and Furlong had to stop it going there. But that was one of those moments where you go, well, hang on, we can do that. That's obviously been worked out. Why are we so leaden for the rest of the game? Is that, say, that one move we had just before we scored, which was a brilliant move in the middle of the pitch. You think, what's going on? Why can we do that once? Because the ability is there. Because the players, surely the players must hate the way we're playing at the moment.
Oh, must do.
They've got to. There can't be any pleasure for the players in playing the way they're playing at the moment.
You look at our goal at Tottenham as well. Really good play.
Great, like, really good, yeah.
Phase of play behind that, and then somehow Luka ends up on the left wing and with his left foot. I've never seen him hit the ball with his left foot. He puts in that kind of a cross, which is amazing.
I thought Luca's passing on Saturday was some of the best it's been for this season until injury time when he just put 2 out of play for no reason. I thought someone was injured both times. But no, his passing was good and he did seem to have control. What on the flip side of that, what we did see with West Brom, and I mentioned Yakoshlu and Gallagher in last week's podcast, is and they did lose, so let's not give them too much praise. But what we saw with Gallagher is a kind of third runner. The runner from midfield that goes beyond the strike, and we don't have that. And I know they played 3 in the middle and we played 2, but it would be interesting to see what would happen if we had someone a bit more energetic next to Luka than say a Jairo. I know James McArthur does offer that and he's unavailable at the moment, but I do wonder whether someone like Conor Gallagher would not necessarily Conor Gallagher, but somebody of that skill set to be the third runner, you know, would offer us something different, because he did that a few times to no success on Saturday. But he did it a few times, and it's quite unusual to see at Selhurst Park because we don't do that ourselves. And, as we've talked about before, this summer's really important in terms of recruitment, but no more importantly than central midfield. And that is an area that we do need to improve. And it might be, you know, pending the signings made in that area of the pitch, that, you know, Luka's form is sustained and it in fact improves. Because I think, you know, he's very much a player that when he's in form, he's in form. When he's not, he's not. And there's no real happy medium with Luka. But yeah, he did well on Saturday. But just a thing on the penalty, very quickly. Last week we had the question about, you know, player of the year, and my nomination is Darnell Furlong for a goal at the Hawthorns and an assist on Saturday. So he's definitely in the running.
Yeah, he really hates playing against Palace.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
Kevin, one nice point that Luka was involved in, and actually Cahill as well, was there was a tussle early on between Zaha and the Turkish guy, who I'm going to call OK, because I think that is actually his name, for West Brom, who was very, very, very good. And they sort of squared up, and Cahill was straight away in there, sort of Damien Delaney style, to break it up. And I think Luca at that point went into the referee's face and was sort of trying to sort of protest the Wolves' point of view. That is something we've talked about a lot on this podcast that seems to be sort of lacking when it comes to Zaha and protection. So that really stood out to me in a moment of the game. I was like, oh, they are doing that job. They are doing that. I mean, only one of them's captain, but that kind of leader's role. I thought it was quite nice to see, but it doesn't happen enough.
No, it doesn't. It's interesting. I did a referees podcast last week, which is, and I made this point, and these three professional referees said, well, basically you're arguing for indiscipline and abusing the referee. I said, I sort of am a little bit, but Wilf needs to see that he's got the protection of his own players at the very least, because until referees show Wilf that he's going to be protected, we have to do it.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't fancy squaring up to Cahill or to Lucas. So they need to step in and just say, even if it's a word to the ref or a word to the player, you don't have to threaten people. But yeah, Wilf needs to be, he needs to feel that they've got his back, basically. And that was good to see. And again, it's one of those things, if there had been a crowd, that would have lifted the crowd. That only, you know, the next 5 minutes would have been a bit of passion and a bit of energy. It's just, so that was good to see. But again, it comes back to you really, really scrapping for positives if somebody's squaring up to someone is like, oh, that was good, wasn't it? That was good. That helps. It's like, yeah, great. Yeah, really good. Yeah, great.
We did win, Kevin.
We did win. Of course we won. But again, it just, as both Matt and Jack have said, it's a stuck record syndrome. It highlights virtually every pod we've had, which is more important. It's like a mate of mine said, we're in the Premier League for another season, but we don't grace the Premier League. And that's not our job. It's not our job to be entertaining. It's our job. It's Steve Parish's job. It's Roy Hodgson's job to secure the future of the club for as long as possible. But as Endicott always says, it would be nice if that came with some entertainment and some passion. And as we've said every pod, if we've got fans back next season, please God, I think we will. And Steve Parish knows that it's going to be hard enough to lure people back as it is without that. Because when you're at the game, as I said last week, you can't sit there in the half wait going, is there somewhere I can watch that bargain hunt I've got stored, which you could do on Saturday. You know, Jack couldn't have left halfway through and done, oh, my mother-in-law's garage needs.
I wish, Kevin. I wish, mate. Well, one thing that did strike me during the second half, you know, 1-0 up, relatively comfortable, not going for it. But one thing did really strike me, you know, perhaps Roy's brief, and this does point towards the summer and perhaps, you know, transitioning to a new, you know, management and a new focus for the club, is that maybe his sole brief is just to maintain Premier League status. And you know, those above him have just said, we don't care how we do it. And you know, the more weeks pass with this kind of turgid approach to playing style, but effective in terms of results, the more that becomes quite obvious to me. And perhaps I'm just late to the party, but you know, it seems to me he just is, you know, one ambition and one objective set by Steve Parish and Dougie Friedman, keeps in the Premier League. He's going to do that with room to spare, and then obviously the summer comes and it's for those above him to make the necessary decisions and appointments.
I don't think Roy needs a brief. I think Roy would resent the brief. I think Hodgson would say, I've been doing this job for 40
years. Fair point.
I've been doing this for 40 years. I know what I have to do. I have to win. Yeah. I have to win football matches. And that's become his mantra. At the end, as like after the end of the Brighton game, it's like there's only one statistic that matters, and that's the 3 points on the board, and that's the way he was brought up. And he's from that generation. Allardyce is the same, Pulis is the same, David Moyes to an extent, or Moyes has adapted, but although I think West Ham have been really lucky, they've had no crowds, that was their be-all, end-all. If you'd said to those managers 25 years ago, you're part of the entertainment industry, they would have laughed at you and said, no, we're not, we're part of the winning industry, it's as simple as that. And then I think that's possibly an issue at the club, because if somebody is saying to Roy, you know what, you do know what you have to do, don't you? I think Roy would say, yeah, I've been doing it long enough to know what I have to do. It's score one more goal than the opposition, if that's all right. And like we said before, there's no asterisk at the 3 points. It doesn't say these were an ill-earned 3 points, or it wasn't a good game. You just get the 3 points that you need to bank 140 million quid for being in the Premier League next season.
I think it's maybe just to add the bit, though, about lack of foresight ahead of next season. Perhaps that's what struck me, the fact that Mateta's making as few appearances as he is.
Yeah.
And that's maybe what I should... Yeah, that's maybe a better way to articulate it. That his objective is until May. There really is no kind of looking ahead towards you know, next season. Perhaps that's the Mateta's bit that's
struck me. I don't know what Matt thinks about this, but Mateta's a good point, because I assumed after he scored against Brighton that he would start
the next
game at least, or the game after that. So, because again, it's one of those things that Roy—it's an old-fashioned thing that Roy doesn't see the need to communicate to play. We're not read. There is a match day program. We're not reading it because it's digital. But even if there was, Roy wouldn't say, "Look, let me explain why Mateta didn't start after the Brighton game." It's just that's the way he works. So we don't know whether he's carrying an injury. We don't know whether Roy didn't want him in the first place. We're just slightly surprised that this young, exciting talent hasn't got a look in. And again, Roy would say, "Why? What's he got to do with you? We've got 3 points."
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think on Mateta itself, the silence can be a bit deafening in that regard. We, off the back of the Brighton game, you go, he scores that goal, which is just, like, for a Palace player, is insane. Like, because you look at that and go, a Palace player scored that? Yeah. Really? Okay, great. since when was the last time a Palace player scored a back heel apart from Popovich's own goal in Portsmouth? Yeah. Was that at home?
No, it was away.
I was away.
I was right behind the goal on the pitch for that.
I still reinforce that was one of the best own goals I've ever seen in my life. But that to me is the last time a Palace player scored with the back heel. And we're talking 15 years and such, right? So you look like, from an outside perspective, go, that's a spark of talent. That's a spark of flair. That's something that Palace doesn't have. And this kind of falls back onto the narrative thing that we were saying a little bit earlier. I think I have a theory that the narrative behind Leeds, Wolves, Arsenal, the fact that we're talking about Arsenal in the same breath as us at the moment shows you how far we've actually come and what a crazy season it's been. But that narrative... and the narrative of us being in a relegation scrap is because we're because of the style of play. Mm. If you look at our style of play, we are very organised, very robust, or try to be, and we want to sneak the 1-0s, get as many clean sheets as possible, and do that. You then look at Wolves, Arsenal, and Leeds. That's not their mentality at all. Leeds. Yeah. There's one thing that all the media seems to have forgotten is the fact that Leeds have only just been promoted. So survival for them is key. Yet there's this narrative about, oh, they're playing, Bielsa's got them playing fantastic football. And he does to a degree. Like, it's fantastic. Like, but his approach is, we're going to score more than you. Whereas our approach is, we want to stop score? You from scoring. Exactly.
We might.
We want to stop you scoring, and we might nick a goal here or there. But ultimately, we'll take the point.
Yeah,
that sort of style of play drives that narrative, and that's why it's been talked about, like, us. Oh, we get this win, we're safe. Oh, we get this win, we're safe. Yet you've got Leeds and Wolves, who I think we're above at this point.
Yeah,
they're never spoken about in that sort of, because of the style of their play. It's always very aggressive. It's always very adventurous. It's always about. Get the ball forward as fast as possible. We're not like that, so therefore that drives that narrative.
Yeah, it's just very true. I mean, guys, we've got very, very analytical this week. We don't normally get into narratives and stuff like that, but it's absolutely true, and it's very interesting to consider.
Are you ready for my XG presentation?
I thought without Andy Street here, I'd at least avoid XG for 1 week.
Okay, no problem. Next week, then.
it's very interesting stuff. I mean, we have had a few questions about whether Roy will take the handbrake off for the rest of the season, because traditionally, Jack, we have seen to come this point in the previous few years when we have been a bit more safe that Roy has let them flourish further forward, and we've had the 5-3 against Bournemouth and games like that. But I'm not feeling as confident that will happen this time around. What do you think?
Different variables as well, you know, no crowd. Well, actually, that's the key variable. It forms my opinion that he won't do that. In fact, the kind of, requirement to play the handbrake off, unless the players really insist it, unless the players get around him and say, come on, Roy, we've done our bit this season. We're safe, and hopefully we'll be mathematically safe sooner rather than later. Unless the players get around him, I just can't see him changing his, you know, brief of 30 plus games for the part for the last four or five. I might be wrong, and it might be that when Arsenal come to Selhurst, and hopefully there's, you know, a crowd in, that those that are in attendance do see a, you know, open game and Palace going for it. But I think that would be the only real reason why Roy would change, particularly with what I just said a moment ago, that it seems to me more and more clearly each week that his sole brief is to manage this club until the end of this season, and that's it. I don't think there's a reason for him to see or to chuck a load of, you know, youngsters in, or Mateta specifically, or play Eze in a slightly different role. I don't think there's a requirement for him to do that ahead of next season. So I would be surprised if the handbrake does come off.
I don't care how many points we've got. When we're playing Man City, Liverpool, Arsenal, Everton, I think we'll approach those games in exactly the same way. When we're playing bigger teams than us, it might be that against Villa, Sheffield United away, who knows, it might be a bit more expansive. But the other variable is we haven't got Loftus-Cheek, who was a big part of those big wins. Yeah. And also, when we talk about letting the handbrake off, it kind of means letting PVA run forward a little bit more. There's no...
that's essentially
what it is. Yeah. It's not like we suddenly become this... Because it's muscle memory. When a team's played a certain way for 32 games, you can't... Whatever you do in training that week, they're not going to suddenly come out and just switch into free-flowing attacking mode. We haven't got the players to do it. Unless in the unlikely event that he says, right, we'll start with Eze, we'll start with Mateta, we'll start with Wilf, and we'll get a kid out of the academy and put him up front as well. It's not going to happen. It's just simply not going to happen. And it also plays into the story about the next manager as well, because whoever is the next manager, it's going to take him 2 years to turn that ship around. We're going to suddenly go in the space of three months in the close season, going from the sort of team we've been for 7-8 years to Leicester, to Leeds. It's not going to happen. So we need to get used to that fact as well.
You said ship, didn't you?
I did say ship, yeah.
Good, just checking. Yeah. Zoom can muck up the audio sometimes. No, good stuff, guys. Very, very interesting and all absolutely spot on. So fair play. It was ship, just to confirm.
You sound like a scout master. Good stuff, guys. That's great. Put the nets away now. That's very good.
I feel like I'm dealing with kids sometimes, Kevin, so that's bang on.
Hey, have some respect.
Let's take a quick... break. We'll come back with questions in part three. In part two, I'm going to drop in a clip from the post-match pod. So patrons won't be getting this, but normal people, but the wider public will be. So after the break, a quick clip from the patron pod. JD, just go to the break. And then we'll come back with questions in part three.
Hey, it's Jesse Kelly. Ronald Reagan famously once said, the 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. Americans are losing faith in the banking system, and at the same time, the U.S. government could soon be headed toward a centralized banking system. How scary is that? How do you protect yourself as the government gets more involved in your life? For me, owning gold is one way. Having gold that I can see and touch makes me feel protected. Having a portion of your retirement in precious metals is another way to feel protected. I don't own crypto, I don't own NFTs, and I don't buy meme stocks. I don't invest in things I don't understand. If you are like me and want to feel safe, it's time to call my friends at the Oxford Gold Group.
Go to www.oxfordgoldgroup.com to learn more. Again, that's www.oxfordgoldgroup.com.
All round, positives, I guess. They're really, I mean, the negatives... we kind of need to cover them a little bit. It did feel, we've talked about the defence being positive in the midfield probably. In terms of offence, it just didn't really click, did it, Adam, today? The kind of attacking runs didn't really happen. And there were a couple of moments where it looked like it might. I think that Eze ran through the midfield and had a shot right at Johnson, for example. But it just didn't feel cohesive really, did it?
No, and I'm not really sure why, because you would say that with the three players behind Benteke that at least we had, you know, people that could carry the ball and carry a threat. And I don't think it's tactical. I just don't think we got those players on the ball enough. And when we did, they didn't show enough, really. I think that's the reality of it. I mean, Ayew had that run in the second half where he carried the ball right through the heart of the defence and then lost control of it right at the death as he sort of got around the box. But I don't think we sort of got at them enough. But I think, you know, okay, playing in front of the back four made it difficult for us to get the ball in those areas and really sort of turn and get a run on people. But, you know, I think Eze at the moment isn't giving us enough for his obvious capability, I think. But then I say that, you know, we're talking about a player that we've plucked out of the Championship last season, and you probably might expect this a little bit. I think that's fair. But, you know, as I said, Jeffrey Schluck would be your only alternative, and obviously they're easing him back. But I still feel, even, as I said before, with all of those attacking options now fit, even Connor Wickham's fit, you know, you've got all those strikers and those sort of forward players to use. There's not that many, I think, that are going to deliver on a consistent basis at Premier League level.
Yeah. I thought you were going to add something else there.
I appreciate what you're saying.
Yeah,
there's, you know, I think there's plenty of players there, but I'm, you know, as I've said to you before, I think as far as the strikers go, you could throw five balls in a bag on a Friday and pick one out, and I would be probably generally not too concerned which one came out of the bag, because I don't think there is a significant situation or significant difference, let's say, whether you're playing Benteke or Mateta or Batshuayi or Wickham or whatever. Or are you as a striker? I don't think any of them are significantly better than any of the others. It makes a huge difference.
Do you not think you would at least give the guy who hasn't really had much of an opportunity that chance to kind of prove himself? Because you can argue with Benteke. He's had, you know, I don't think Benteke had a terrible game today. I don't think it was worthy of being dropped. But on the flip side, I do kind of think, unless he's going to be given a new contract and there is going to be a plan for him to be involved next season,
I wouldn't bet against it.
Oh, goodness. Well, in that case, I mean, but I do think that unless that's the case, you would surely give Mateta an opportunity. And actually, I understand that this is Roy Hodgson is looking to win as many games as he can. And if he thinks that he can do that better with Benteke, that's his right to choose the player that he thinks is going to do better there. But I do end up thinking, like, this is a player, you know, Mateta, this is a player that they wanted, what, £18 million for euros for him during the summer. He scored goals in the Bundesliga. He scored a decent goal out of nothing for Palace against Brighton. I just think, why not? Because it doesn't, again, today, it didn't really feel like, I don't think Benteke had a terrible game, but I don't think he was influential in the way that you would kind of want your centre striker to be. But I also think that comes down to other players around him not doing enough to kind of create opportunities. You know, we keep talking about crossing it into the box. How many crosses were there into the box for Benteke today? I don't think there were any. I genuinely can't recall a single cross into the box that Benteke could have attacked. Do you think that is something that, I mean, with, it's so difficult because it feels like we're kind of raking over hot coals, but would Roy Hodgson change it about for that, like to give Mateta a chance? I don't see it. Do you, Dom?
We'll get his chance in the run-in. I know what you mean. That's a difficult balancing act between what Roy thinks is the best chance of gaining some points ahead of, you know, 9 difficult games, as Adam suggested. Potentially, I mean, 7 or 8 of them you look at and think, well, they're going to be very particularly tricky. So he wants the points in the bag, and if he thinks that Benteke, who did score in the last game, and scored the winner at Brighton in our previous win, you know, he probably offers him the best opportunity. They've also seemed to have gone increasingly direct of late, which I'm a bit unnerved by in some ways. I mean, the first instinct from the fullbacks seems to be to and the centre halves actually is to float long balls up towards Benteke at the moment. And we heard Ray Lewington consistently shouting, "Go long, go long, we're going long," in previous matches as well. So that seems to be their mindset at the moment. And Benteke probably is that, at least he's sort of steeped in the way of English football, you know, and he knows that game plan. It's happened to him before at Palace. The crossing thing's quite interesting because there was a lot of, so there's been a lot of pining for Andros Townsend flinging crosses into Christian Benteke. And people sort of thinking, "Oh, this is what we used to do. This is what we used to do when Big Sam was in charge." It happened once under Big Sam at Bournemouth in a game that we'd already won. It was 1-0 at the time, and Townsend put a cross in for Benteke. It happened probably more under Pardew that season, where we actually a lot of the crosses that were put in were diagonal balls hit from deep. Thinking the brilliant header that he scored against Everton in particular, I can't remember who put it in, maybe MacArthur, but a sort of pinged centre from quite deep, a diagonal, and he plants it in. There were a few like that in that little period, but we haven't really, although he scored a lot of headed goals, I'm not convinced that actually that has been that common. He's done it against West Ham a couple of times, maybe against Leicester under Roy. He's actually probably done it under Roy more than most managers, and yet we sort of all pine for the Big Sam with Benteke and getting the best out of him. Well, I don't think he did get the best out of him.
Well, Palace made that. I'm sorry, Rob. Palace made that video, didn't they, after the Brighton game of the combos back, Andros and Benteke, and the video was about 90 seconds long. It was really short. It felt to me like they had this idea for a video, got halfway through and thought, "Oh shit, there's not many, is there? Well, we'll just put it out anyway." Because you were right. What you were saying, I was thinking the same watching that video. Yeah, it feels like it was more of a thing, but actually, like, the evidence suggests it possibly isn't. So that was really interesting to me, that I sort of revisionism of the Andros to Benteke thing is actually not quite all remember.
I kind of feel like we're kind of raking over hot the same kind of thing over and over again, in that it feels like there is opportunity to try something different in attack, and by that I mean a change in how we're actually doing the attacking portion of the game. And perhaps even reverting back to the kind of attacking approach we had under Roy two or three seasons ago. And I know that there's an argument that, you know, we don't have the quality of players like Loftus-Cheek and like Kabai to do that. But to not even try that just seems a little bit kind of, it just seems, again, it's the kind of madness of repeating the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. We're not, it's not that we're, we've had this complaint pretty much all season where opportunities seem to be very sparingly kind of created. And then, you say about Benteke, for example, today, he had that one chance and he turned and shot and it was well saved, but that is all that's as far as it went in terms of opportunities for Benteke to score. So we can say Benteke.
No, he had the other one, Rob, in the second half.
You're right.
He should have just pulled the trigger and shot across the keeper and had a touch and took himself wide.
But again, it's very, very rare, Adam. It's not like we're seeing like 20 chances being created, which, and to be fair here, I'm not being entirely critical of Roy. I'm saying that Roy actually had us playing the kind of football where we were creating 10, 15 chances in a game previously, and we're just not doing that now.
Well, in fairness, Rob, your point being, in the first two seasons that Roy was in charge, we finished seventh in those two seasons for the most attempts at the opposition's goal behind the big six clubs. So actually, as an attacking force under Roy in the first two seasons, we were the best other team outside the big six in the Premier League. Again, I'm not sure everything is massively different. I think it's personnel, and the personnel today should have been good enough to offer us more, I think, than they did. What's happened?
2-0 Burnley, an absolute screamer from McNeil. Jeez.
Really?
Sorry, you have to delete that.
And sorry, what I was going to say to you also, which I think is a fair point, is Christian Benteke, I think, has been aware for quite some time from what I'm led to believe in terms of, you know, his future in, you know, he's not been offered a new contract. He might be playing himself into one now, but I think he's been told, I mean, Dom would probably be the person that would know more, but, you know, on a couple of occasions that his future may well lay away from Selhurst and to fix himself up. And then we're trying to get a tune out of the bloke at the same time as well, which is, you know, the difficulty that the coach has in the director of football system, if you like, to, you know, within a football club. Because I think, you know, the club's not offering contracts or telling players, you know, to fix themselves up elsewhere, or the agent, you know, move him on if you can. You know, the coach then has to tell him that he's wanted, needed, and get a tune out of him, which I don't think is the easiest situation all of the time. And that perhaps also, you know, underlines my point about how difficult the season it's been in that respect with so much uncertainty.
It's time to get your checking account to zero with free checking from PenFed. That's zero ATM fees, zero balance requirements, and zero time spent waiting for your paycheck to direct deposit, because you can receive it up to 2 days early. Open your account with just $25 and see how big zero can be. Apply online today at PenFed.org/free checking. Early direct deposit eligibility may vary between pay periods and timing of payer's funding. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
Welcome back to part three of the 5-Year Plan podcast. Well, if you're a patron, you haven't heard part two, because you've already heard it. It was a clip from the post-match pod. You've already heard it a few days ago. So, yeah, we've magically gone from one to three. And part three, I should say really quickly, Summer Hayes was our listener that mentioned about the handbrake off in the previous part. I forgot to mention. So thank you, Summer, for that question. And this pod is sponsored this week by Beer 52. You'll have already heard a little pre-record ad I dropped in earlier in the episode. But just a reminder to go to beer52.com/FYP to get your free case of 8 Belgian beers. All you got to do is pay the $5.95 for the postage. And one of the people on this call, Mr. Jack Pierce, has already sampled some of these Beer 52 beers, and you're a fan, aren't you?
I am. I think by starting a beer subscription and appearing on podcasts during lockdown, I have in fact completed lockdown. So pretty happy with myself. I have sampled Beer 52. Yeah, typically they do a theme each month, and some interesting stuff that you normally wouldn't see in your local offie. So if you're interested in that type of thing, I would I'd recommend to at least give it a couple of go. I think you can cancel after a month. I'm not doing this selling pitch for them, but I think you can cancel pretty quickly. But yeah, if you're interested, then give them a go, particularly a box of 8 beers for $5.95. that does sound pretty decent.
There you go. So go to beer52.com. that's the word beer, then 52.com/FYP. Right, let's move on to questions from our listeners. Kevin, as ever, literally every week we get questions about Roy's future. Probably pertinent given his contract's up in the summer and we haven't heard about any renewals as of, what is it, Monday at 1:48 p.m. So people are wondering about Roy's future. Let me read a couple of questions out. Safe Hands 71.
Hi, Safe Hands.
Hi, Safe Hands.
Do we keep Roy in charge for next season? Richard Asquith says...
Hello, Richard.
Ideal time to bring in the new manager. Safe. 3 weeks until the next game. 9 games to assess the squad. Interesting.
That's not the one.
Ash Wills.
Hi, Ash.
This season has been possibly the most boring Palace team to watch, as Roy doesn't have the fans giving their instinctive reaction in the stadium. So we mentioned that in part one. Would you endure another 12 months of Roy if we could secure a new manager like Steven Gerrard? Recent SPL champion, as he'll want Premier League experience before going on to manage Liverpool. Ash has got it all planned out. And then Rune HDK, guess he might be one of our Scandinavian listeners. Who would bed the perfect replacement to King Roy There you go. After the season, if the club decides it's time to move on, Chris Wilder, recently departed Sheffield United, Rafa Benitez, what's your view on the perfect manager for the Eagles? Kevin, I'm sure your opinion hasn't changed much in a week, but where do you stand?
It hasn't changed much in a week. No, I think Roy's contract coming to an end is the perfect opportunity to make a change. But I have to say, and I was talking to Ed about this after the game, I'm also quite nervous about the change, to be perfectly honest, in the same way that people in the entertainment industry are slightly nervous about coming out of lockdown. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what sort of world we're going back into. We've had this safety blanket in Roy Hodgson now for 3.5 seasons. He's kept us up. If he was to become or stay as our manager next season, he'd probably keep us up again. And yet you kind of feel instinctively something has to change. That, but, you know, Chris Wilder has been linked with Celtic and Portsmouth. I don't think he would particularly want to come in. That's the trouble. Who do you get in? I don't know. I want Roy to go with our blessing, but I'm also nervous about what is going to happen when he doesn't. And I think Frank de Boer was such a bad kicking for Steve Parrish that he's not going to go anywhere. My instinct is that we'll end up with Sean Dyche as manager, because it's not too radical a change, or Eddie Howe, who's young and blonde, and that will represent a big change. And of course, a lot of people putting two and two together about Eddie Howe being the pundit on Sky for our game, and they're right to do so, because Sky do play games like that. You know, sometimes in a tabloid, on the back of the Sun, you might see a headline that says, well-known pod presenter has been suspended for breaking lockdown with a zebra, and you don't know who it is. But on
something
the same
you want
page,
to tell us, Kevin?
No, but on the same page, it will have a story saying James Daly has decided zoos to reopen. You know, there will be clues as to what the story is about. There are four reasons why Eddie Howe would have been the pundit for the game, the Palace game, because he doesn't do a lot of pundit work, and there are quite a few games over Sky. It's either coincidence, which I don't think it is, it's either mischief. They've put Eddie Howe on to see if people will put two and two together and make a story that they can then run with. It's either a story they already know is going to happen and they want to be in on it at the start, or Eddie Howe has said to his agent, or vice versa, look, you've had your 6 months off. It's about time you told Palace that you're available. So go on telly and say things like, they're a great team, they're really well organised, but wouldn't it be nice to see them score a few goals? Which is basically what happened. For me, that was Eddie Howe putting himself in the shop window for the Palace job, to be honest. And I think there are people like John Terry who would make interesting choices, but I can't see it being anyone other than Sean Dyche or Eddie Howe. And neither of those are huge sales to the fan base. If you're going to go for Sean Dyche, stay with Roy Hodgson and give him 50 million quid to spend. That's the thing, because I am nervous about what's going to happen. It's great, because for all that we've said we want to see better football, Brighton and Fulham play lovely football, but they're both in danger of going down. So there is somewhere in between, and the fact is that at the moment, in the way the economic crisis has engulfed football, staying in the Premier League is really, really important. It will be next season. So I kind of hope that Roy decides to resign, so the decision is taken out of all our hands. But I am nervous about who's going to come in and replace him, to be honest, because this idea that somebody will come in and wave a magic wand and we'll suddenly start saying, well, we'll score more goals than you do, because, you know, Leeds say that, but quite often they forget to do the scoring more goals than the other team bit.
Yeah,
which it's lovely as a policy. It's really nice as a theory. Right, you score two, we'll score three, but quite often you don't score the three. So somewhere in between an expected goal, whatever it is, of 0.1 a game and Brighton's 900 a game would be lovely. But and that's what I say. Whoever comes in, I don't think will suddenly try and change the style of play in the course of one season. I generally don't think they do, because we won't be able to recruit enough players to do it for a start off.
Yeah,
you're not going to be able to change the whole team, and if you've got a back four and a midfield two who are used to playing that style of football, you can bring in a creative player, of course you can, or an instinctive goal scorer, but that's not going to change everything in 3 months.
To be fair, John Terry has spent his whole career making interesting choices, so sure how I'd feel about that on the Palace touchline. But Matt, it feels like, I mean, the Eddie Howe point that Kevin makes is very interesting, and I think we saw Chris Coleman previously doing a Palace match, Mark Hughes, and that people were sort of saying the same things. Out of those three, you'd take Howe, obviously. But actually, the more we talk about the manager situation on this podcast, it feels like we almost argue the case to keep Roy for ourselves. We sort of come full circle. And actually, last few weeks, and Kevin makes the point about staying up there being important and the style of change won't happen overnight. Does it feel like we're arguing for another 12 months of Roy?
Well, I mean, I'll know my colours to the post at this point. I'm not a fan of Roy. And I'm not a fan of Roy's style. I think he's done a fantastic job for us. But given, if I'm going to sit on, I usually sit on the fence with these things, but if I'm going to say, I'm more inclined to be Roy out than I am anything else. So, but given, I think there's a big element where everyone's got to consider what's going on in the world right now as well. It's not, football in itself usually does get put into some sort of, for want of a better term, its own bubble. And it's all about, oh, yeah, we'll go out and get this person. But most, and I'm the same. I forget about this. It's like sometimes you play Football Manager too long and all of a sudden you think, oh, I can just go do this. And then all of a sudden things have changed. Like, for example, in my last game, I've taken Dulwich Hamlet from the Vanarama South up until the Championship in four seasons. Like that's just impossible. But we as football fans, we think like that. You know, we think about the romantic side. We think, realistic terms, you look at that from given the current context here, everything. Think about the amount of money it would actually take to bring in a Sean Dyche, for example. If we identify the caliber of player, manager, same thing can be said for players, but generally speaking, if we identify the kind of ideal candidate for manager, this is the manager that we want, and this is the style of play that we want to, and this is where we want to be going forward. If Sean Dyche is that player, if he is that manager, then you think about how much it's going to cost to get him. We've then got to go to Burnley and go, how much do you want for him? We don't forget that Burnley have just been taken over. And one of the biggest things about Burnley's takeover, as I discovered on this other random pod about football finance, is that Sean Dyche being at Burnley was a big, big, big thing for these guys taking over. Like that was one of the main factors. That was a thing. So if we go to them and say, yeah, we want to take Sean Dyche off you, we're gonna have to shell out a hell of a lot of money to get him, because that's how highly Burnley rate him. In the grand scheme of things, if we are going to identify that, then having another 12 months of Roy makes sense, because we don't have to shell out X amount of money to get him. And he would probably accept the same wages and all that sort of stuff and et cetera, et cetera. We wouldn't necessarily have that. But that being said, both JD and Kevin's points about all of a sudden starting to have certain former managers and certain appear in punditry. The Eddie Howe thing was a stark thing. Like, as soon as he popped up on Sky, I was like, what? Why is he here? Oh, there's only generally one reason why he would be there.
Yeah.
There's some sort of deal with the agent or something along those lines. You fall under that perception. Same thing with Chris Coleman, how Chris Coleman was basically talking himself into the job and mentioning typical Palace about seven times. you can read between the lines in these sort of things. But generally speaking, like, reading between the lines is a bit foggy. Like, it's all grey. We don't really know what's going on. With Roy, we got a safe pair of hands. We know what we're going to get. But unfortunately, we also know what we're going to get on the pitch. One thing that I keep reminding myself, and I think I mentioned it in the chat a good couple of times, is this season is such an odd season. And what with everything going on at the moment, everyone is under the microscope because every single game is on TV. Literally every game. I haven't had a season ticket for a couple of years because unfortunately I haven't been able to afford it. But this is the most amount of Palace games I've ever seen in a season, yeah. Apart from when I had a season ticket. As a result, you sit there and you watch and you analyse absolutely everything. And I think that's what a lot of people are kind of concerned about. And that's why they're so frustrated with the style of play, because we are seeing every minute of every game, and we are getting bored by the kind of the shut up shop mentality like that. And that's why, because we see it every single week. And when you can go and see the games, you make a day of it. Of course, there is the element of that, but you don't see every single game. So there may be one or two games that you see. You might not see the West Brom and Palace game, because that might not be on Sky, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
Out of all the games that weekend, that would probably, the North London Derby was that weekend. You know, like it's that would be the thing. Palace West Brom wouldn't be on TV. So you wouldn't see that. You wouldn't see the performance. You just wouldn't see it. So therefore, kind of ignorance is bliss in that regard.
But there still would be an air of, there still would be an air of the team not, you know, playing especially well, even if they weren't on television. Because this does happen to teams, and this is why teams do end up making changes, like, you know, Charlton with Kirbishley, Stoke with Pulis. You know, this does happen, and there were crowds in the grounds back then. So this air around the proper negative style of play does happen. But I do agree with you totally that you know, watching every game and it being under the microscope does increase, the assessment, and the assessment being a fairly negative one at the moment. But, the thing with Roy, for me, and I'll keep this very brief, is that, yes, he has kept us up safe. And I agree with Kevin, actually, if he stayed for another season, he probably would do. But eventually you're going to have to end it, simply because the issues around our playing squad, but also Roy's age. He will want to get to a point where he will want to walk away. And, yes, he might keep us up next season, but I'd hazard a guess that actually going, you know, a season beyond this one, he might not do. And the final point, and this is probably a discussion for another pod closer to the end of the season, will the appointment about Roy, or Roy staying on or not staying on, start to influence discussions around Wilf extending his contract? And that's something that I think the club do need to consider. That's some forward planning that they need to start selling to Wilf Zaha if they want to even consider him extending his stay beyond the end of the season after next.
A really good point.
Yeah. I think Hodgson might be a number of managers like Potter, Hasenhüttl, Sean Dyche, where the owners give them the benefit of the doubt because this has been such a bizarre season that they'll say we can't judge what's happened on this season, because Roy could turn around and say, look, if we had a full house every home game, I wouldn't have played like that. We would have scored more goals. And in the long run, these decisions are done financially. The point Matt makes about Sean Dyche is a good one, but Sean Dyche is currently unhappy with the lack of money he was given by the new owners and the promises he's been made for because they've basically, the new owners leveraged the buyout and haven't got as much money as they said they would have for players. On the other hand, I don't think we've got the money to say we'll come to Palace and we'll give you a £50 million war chest. You know, Chris Wilder wouldn't have been leaving Sheffield United for football reasons. Chris Wilder fell out because the owner wanted him to implement an international scouting organisation, and Chris Wilder wanted most of his players to come from within 20 miles of Bramall Lane. So I think a lot of managers who, under normal circumstances, would be moved on because of a mediocre season, won't be. And I'm beginning to suspect that Roy may be one of them, unless there is a ready-made replacement that can come in and play a similar style of football for a while and work within a limited budget. You know, that would be Roy Hodgson. You know, if Roy Hodgson wasn't our manager, there would be people saying, why don't you get Roy in for a couple of seasons? He's a safe pair of hands. You know, so I don't think it's a four, even with Roy's contract ending, I don't think it's a, I hope it is, because I'm not as anti-Roy. I don't think Matt's necessarily anti-Roy, but I'm not as anti-Roy as Matt is. I wouldn't lose any sleep if he stays, but I wouldn't lose any sleep if he goes. But if his ending the contract doesn't automatically lead to him going, I wouldn't be at all surprised. I genuinely don't think it's a foregone conclusion anymore.
Good points, everyone. Again, I feel I'm like the scout leader again. But well done, everyone.
You're really are dissing. You're dissing, you're dissing Enders and Streety. Basically, this is your message to Enders and Streety, saying, look,
debug
look
your ideas up.
You've got a really entertaining, yeah, flair-filled pod.
Yeah, exactly.
With you two not here.
Exactly. Guys, I appreciate we are overrunning a little bit, so I apologise. Really quickly, though, I do think we need to address Wilf's refusal to take the knee, and we have had a question from someone who's titled themselves "Oh, this bloody computer." Has Enders sent a question?
Well, my dad. What's going on with your dad?
What a great. And they've said
it could be you.
They've put a little joke in it as well. Ari Wilf's brave stance on taking the knee, does this prove once and for all that he doesn't go down easily?
Good.
I mean, maybe not a time or place, but a good, you know, solid, yeah, solid joke. Jack, I know we sort of spoke off air about this, so I'll come to you first for this one. I do have Wilf's statement here, so I'll read it very quickly or parts of it, but I think we're all aware of sort of his reasons why he decided to stop taking the knee. He has said it for a while. He said, there's no right or wrong decision, but for me personally, I feel kneeling has just become a part of the pre-match routine. At the moment, it doesn't matter whether we kneel or stand. Some of us continue to receive abuse, and that is happening almost on a daily occurrence at the moment on social media. And I think Wilf, and I think they said this at the game that weekend, is the first player in the Premier League. I think there are a few clubs down lower down the division who collectively have stopped doing it. QPR, that's right. But Wilf is the first player to do it individually. What were your thoughts on it, Jack?
I thought it was no surprise to anyone that's, you know, kept abreast of the situation with Wilf. He's been quite honest in another podcast recently on the Judy, is it? I think it's called.
Yes.
Yeah. He spoke quite well on that about it. He also spoke at the Financial Times Football Festival about the same issue. You know, it was quite obvious to anyone who's heard his words recently that that was something he was considering. I thought his statement word for word was spot on. I agree with him. You know, as I'm a white man, you know, it's probably a different perspective than, well, it is a different perspective from his, but I have seen the knee just become a part of the pre-match ritual. You know, they, instead of shaking hands before the game for COVID, it seems like the knee has just kind of taken up that same amount of time. And I've seen players, you know, forget it. They've started the game rather embarrassingly. They've started running. I think Christian Benteke, probably the most comedically, yeah, of any player in the league this season, started running before players took the knee in the home match against Spurs in December. So, yeah, I think all the points he raises are solid points, and it's his choice. I think the fact that he also clarified that he's not making any judgment on anyone that wishes to continue taking the knee is really important. He's not suggesting that he doesn't agree that it's still an issue. In fact, the opposite of that, he thinks more needs to be done. So, I you know, I'm super proud of Wilf for a lot of things. I think his attitudes towards the wider picture rather than just football is to be lauded. I think he does a lot of good work that kind of goes under the radar. Locally, he's a big supporter of what Palace do in the community. And for me, I think it was only a matter of time before a player did make this decision, and the fact it's Wilf doesn't necessarily surprise me.
My guess is that the Premier League will hope that more players like Wilf make that decision, because I know for a fact that they're nervous about what's going to happen when grounds are full again, when players take the knee, because there will be idiots in every ground who take exception to it, no doubt about it. But Wilf's point is absolutely right. And again, Jack's quite right to point out, you're talking to four white middle-class men, basically, about an issue that you should be asking other people about it. But Will's point is absolutely right. Before each game, you watch Match of the Day 2, before every highlight package, they will show the knee. Every game, Sky the same, every highlight package, they will show the knee and they'll make a comment about eradicating racism, blah, 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 it's the right thing to do. Have Sky, have BBC, have TalkSport, have any of these broadcasting companies employed more black staff during this time? Have they changed their policies to get more black people in? Are social media taking abuse of black players more seriously? Are people being arrested for abusing black players on social media? Are black candidates getting interviewed for manager jobs? No, nothing practical is changing. This has been going on since June. Initially, it was a wonderful, powerful job. The first game back, it was brilliant. It was actually brought tears to my eyes. It was fantastic. It's fast becoming an empty gesture. It clearly is, because the people that are highlighting it are doing nothing about the issues. And it's, you know, it's like PVA sent that when he missed the chance against Man United. PVA publicised some of the tweets that he got.
Yeah.
horrible, horrible tweets. Taking the knee is not changing that. And I think you probably need to, you know, Wilf refusing to take the knee makes it sound like he's doing something unacceptable. And I think that needs to change. Yeah. And oddly, him standing during the taking the knee was just as powerful a gesture as other players take the knee. But I've got a sneaking suspicion that by the time crowds are back in, the Premier League will say, well, it's done its job. We've drawn attention to it. Let's start with a clean slate, everybody. Referee blows the whistle, game starts. Because they are genuinely worried about how it's going to look around the world if you've got people, as you had in a couple of the games when, you know, we saw it at Millwall when there's only 1,000 people left in. It's not a good look for the Premier League if people are watching in Malaysia or Australia and a sizable proportion of the crowd are booing and taking the knee. So I don't think it will be happening when, for maybe the first game back, they'll do it. But after that, I think it will be quietly dropped. And, you know, I think Wilf's perfect time to do it. And as Jack said, I wish more people were aware of what people like Wilf do in our community for their community. And then it wouldn't be an issue, but it will be an issue. And hats off to Wilf for that would sound like a bad pun, but for standing up to it.
Well, Matt, as all this body computer has said, they've called it a brave stance, which is absolutely the right way to say it. You know, like Kevin says, some people are framing it as they're refusing to take the knee. And the thing about Wilf is he gets so much stick from opposition fans for the way he is on the pitch. But off the pitch, I think he's got the most integrity of any footballer that I think I've ever met. He's a man of his word. He said he would do this. He stuck to it. And he is someone that really, truly believes in the things he believes in. And as Jack says, I've got so much respect for that. And very proud that this is a Crystal Palace player that is doing this as well. So, I think it's one of those things that, Matt, that I think I hope that most listeners and Palace fans will back Wilf for and be as proud of him as we are.
Agreed. Fully back his decision to do that. Ultimately, I think Kevin's right about the narrative behind it is Wilf refused to do something that everybody else is doing. Well, that's not strictly true. That was his decision. It's always been a decision based. And it's always been the whole point of taking the knee is to highlight the fact that this is just not right. Like, racism is just it's the most abhorrent thing on the planet, in my opinion. I cannot stand it. And Kevin's point about the Premier League being nervous about it is understandable, because, as unfortunately, there are some people who go to football matches who do have those views. It raises the question about, as a society, we can do more about this. So I think the whole taking the knee and the standing up, as Wilf has just done, it raises the questions that there are things that can be done. Are the people in power who can make sizable change, are they doing it? You look at kind of what they're doing. Are the social media companies taking the necessary steps to do this? Are they actually going to do these sort of things? And right now they're not. It's very, very clear that they're not, because regardless of what happens, we're going to see this. And it's not just a football problem. It's a wider societal problem as well. It's just the football is one of the biggest platforms in which this is being raised. I'm very, very happy that it's being raised and we are raising awareness that we should stamp out racism, because it's just crazy.
I think this does differ as well, Matt, from someone like Lyle Taylor at Nottingham Forest saying he's not doing it, and he kind of conflated it with the issue of Black Lives Matter. Politically, he didn't agree necessarily with that. With Wilf, he's simply commenting about the particular issue of kneeling not being, you know, a valid enough offering anymore, and he's made no comment whatsoever that, you know, not more needs to be done, and that he's fully willing to continue to support it. But that's something I took pride in, that, you know, he wasn't commenting politically, he was commenting literally about almost how they do it.
Agreed.
I thought that was really important.
Yeah, totally agreed.
Absolutely. Well, good on Wilf for doing that. You know, he gives us a lot of reasons to be very proud of him as a footballer and as a person, and this is another one of them. Let's move on really quickly, Kevin. One more question. One word answer, please, and it's from Ian Matthews. And it says, has Kevin's piece of paper been ripped up now?
Yes.
Hey, there we go.
I selected the piece of paper. I didn't get around to writing it, but the piece of paper that I was going to write, that has, it's gone, and we don't need it. It's...
That fills me with so much confidence, Kevin. Thank you.
Well, there you go. That's what we wanted to hear.
Filled me with dread. Now I'm concerned.
Do you know what? I kind of miss it a little bit, though. You know, we talk about Roy being the safety blanket. I kind of miss not having that in my top, because, you know, I used to like going, oh, right, somebody Newcastle lost.
Well,
I can't wait for that Newcastle Brighton game next week. It's going to be fun. And then Fulham Newcastle on the last day. So we have to thank Newcastle, by the way, because if we get to see Palace play against Arsenal, it will be because Newcastle kicked up such a fuss with the Premier League about them having to play against Fulham with a crowd in, that the Premier League kind of went, all right, everybody better get a chance to play to see their team then. So,
how scared could they be of Hugh Grant drinking Sauvignon Blanc in the stand? I mean, honestly, it's not the scariest prospect.
Well, I've seen Hugh Grant drinking Sauvignon Blanc. Get one bottle too many and he can go. But to be perfect, he's ruined many a soiree, Jack. Trust me. Really, the whole filming of Paddington 2 was a mess. Finally, Steve Bruce has done Palace a favour.
Finally, yes.
hopefully,
20 years. It's only 20 years.
Exactly. Thanks, hopefully, Steve. There will be 6,500 Palace fans. I was talking to Steph from Proud and Palace about this the other day. Just even if you don't get a ticket for the game, just to be able to go to the Pawsons and watch that game on telly and wave off the lucky few who've got tickets. What a thing to look forward to. Unless, of course, we need 3 points.
It's going to be fine. The paper's ripped
fine.
Up.
The paper's gone. We're fine. Last four seasons, people stayed up with 34 points.
Yeah.
Three times of 35 points. We're fine.
37 has been more than enough for a while. So we'll be good. I think that's a nice positive part to end this podcast on. So thank you, Matt, for coming on. Solid pod debut. We'll give it a round of applause.
Thank you. Well done, Matt.
Thank you very much. And thank you very much for your support via Patreon as well. We really appreciate it. And let's thank Jack. Good to
Thank
have you.
On. Yeah, off back to the garage now. So cheers for that. That's a nice break.
And Kevin, as ever, always good to have you on.
But yeah, I'd say Matt's performance was more than solid. But then I'm the arm around the shoulder man. You're the give him a bollocking man. But
you're the Sammy Lee to my Sam Allardyce.
Yeah, it's
I appreciate that, Kevin. Thank you, mate. I appreciate a good arm around the shoulder, especially if there's a pint nearby as well. thank you. Thank you so much, guys. It's an absolute pleasure. And thank you for all you guys have done for the pod. Especially throughout this lockdown period. For me personally, it's been one of those, being part of that WhatsApp club, being that was a massive, massive help through this entire, just whatever this past, however long this has been. And I think I share a lot of people's viewpoint, saying this has helped massively throughout a crazy period, and even more and all the dull performances that we've had, especially recently, this is a kind of a shining point on it. So thank you guys. It's an absolute pleasure.
Oh, top man, thank you very much. That's lovely to hear. And they're a good bunch in the WhatsApp group. They're a really good bunch indeed. You are. Well, we'll talk about it off air. Anyway, thank you very much for joining us. Have a great week and have a great couple of weeks. We'll be back. We're going to do a few filler pods in the next few weeks, so keep an eye out for that. But in the meantime, stay safe and we'll see you again soon. Goodbye.
Podcast Network.